session number 23140, reel 2.
Can you take me through what happened from setting off from Broadwell to landing in France, please?
What happened to me personally?
Yes, please.
We went to, on the day previous, of course, we went and loaded the aircraft, put our kit on it, and then, of course, it was cancelled for 24 hours. We went back and I couldn't get to sleep. They said it was supposed to be a compulsory sleeping out in the afternoon, and I couldn't get to sleep, so I went down to Camp Cinema and remember seeing the Delta Rhythm boys singing Dem Bones, Dem Bones, Dem Dry Bones. And that was amusing me when we got being planed about 11 o'clock that evening on the 5th of June, and flew up to as far as across the coast at Worthing, and then I fell asleep. I think I was catching up on the sleep I'd lost when I was watching the Delta Rhythm Boys. Anyway, we got across, somebody kicked me awake when we got it to the coast, and we were flying along the coast. And then the next thing, we banked in, and I became aware of small arms fire coming up, and a lot of rattling on the fuselage, and then I thought it was bullets, but afterwards I found it had been hailstones. I'd have felt a lot better at the time if I'd known that. Well, the next thing was the red light went on and the green light went on, and out I went along with everybody else. And when I got out, looking around to try and spot the two rivers, and nowhere in sight. Which wasn't surprising, because I was about 20 miles adrift. I'd been dropped the far side of the Deves instead of the east bank of the Orne, and I came down into a little orchard. I got out my parachute. I suppose the parachute was hanging in the tree, one of the trees, and I just got out of it. And then I got my first sight of this huge hedgerow that's called Bocage hedgerow, and I clambered over that. There was a building in the corner, but I didn't want to wake anybody up, so I got over the top, and then I saw silhouetted on the skyline was two guys, and I went up to them and I said, "Haven't you ever been told about skylining?" And they said, "Well, you're not in any danger from you, mate, because you've still got your rifle in your leg band." So anyway, during the night, I was the only corporal there, see, and I picked up about six guys until we came down, and there was a load of racetrack barriers and signs saying "Beware of horses" in French, was it? And eventually we came out and into the daylight, and we came down, and there was a river there, and there was a glider, and it had been crashed into the side of the river, and the men were extracting a jeep and trailer and various things, and we went past them, and then we carried on down the road, and we saw this, there was this little village, you see, and it turned out to be a place called Douzelay. And anyway, I thought, well, I'm not going to go through that. There's only five or six of us. And so I carried on round the river, followed the river round. And then we came into touch with a sergeant with about another half dozen. And the fellas I was with, I didn't know, I don't knew these fellas slightly. They couldn't have been my stick. And this sergeant, they said his name was Bullock, Sergeant Bullock. And so, as a good group, we decided that we'd go back through the village. So this place is called Douzelay. We went down, it was kind of just a straight road, straight through the side of the village. And we'd got about 100 yards down, and all the natives were coming out and bringing us cider and milk and apples. And then suddenly a car came through the middle of the village, and of course we opened up and blew all his windows out, and there was two German soldiers got out and gave themselves up. And I went up, and during this was going on, there was a man came running out of the house, and there was a car parked there, but just where this car, the German car, was standing. And he dragged something out, some bundle, and ran back in the house. So I went over to the house to find out what it was. And it was a little child, about 4 years old. So I thought, that was a very brave thing to do. All the firing was going on at the time. And anyway, neither of these Germans had a scratch on them. But so he took the prisoner, and I took a grenade off them. And they had the stick grenades, you know. And we just marched off again. And in the meantime, I didn't realise it, but two of, when I was in the house, two of the men that was with us took his car and tried to drive through Trelawn. But later on, only very recently, I found out that they didn't get through because the bridge had been blown. And anyway, as we carried on down the road...
What did happen to the two Germans?
We took them with us as prisoners. And they were really smartly dressed and looked like propaganda Germans. You know, they were going to a photo shoot, which I think, you know, they looked so good. And anyway, we carried on down this straight road. And then two cars come down, and of course we were both sides of the road. And as these cars come up, we started firing at them, and the first one went off, but it got away. But they were wearing blue uniforms. I thought they probably might have been policemen. They might have been Navy men, I don't know. But the second one, we killed three very senior officers, and we took their flight identification album. And I took a camera off one of them. And what was the other thing I did? And a little Walther pistol. It was about very small calibre it was, like a lady's gun almost. And anyway, he carried on down the road, and then I realised that they were going off to the left. And I had seen a signpost saying that Trelawn was ahead down this road, and I realised that they were going to the left. They were going to go away from where we should be going, because we should be going northeast. Anyway, I was the last one up the bank, and I got caught on the wire, and suddenly I heard another car approaching from the direction of Trelawn. And I panicked a bit, and I was hooked up on the wire. I couldn't get myself free. So I thought, well, now I pulled out the grenade, I unscrewed the end, pulled the string, there was a cord in there, and I slung it over the bank. And of course, everybody come running back to find out what the fuss was, because it made a hell of a bang. And we found it was a car with two German soldiers, with two ladies in there, and a driver. And I think they must have been going on leave. But hard luck for them, that's two more prisoners we had.
Were any of them killed or injured?
No. I didn't see what happened. I just took a chance and just slung it over the bank, you see. And it landed on the road, and apparently it landed by the car and frightened them, but it didn't do any damage. So anyway, we carried on.
What happened to these women?
We let them go with the French driver. He was a Frenchman, the driver. And they might have been their wives, I don't know, but it's hard luck. We just took the two men prisoners. And they're very smartly dressed again. We felt a bit scruffy with them because we were all in our combat outfit. Anyway, we carried on north when I sort of got them to understand that they were heading the wrong way. We started going north. And we came to a field, and they decided that they wanted a rest and sat down in this field. Well, after all my training in fieldcraft that I'd done, I was horrified, you know. I just couldn't understand that they'd do this. And I went and sat on the bank. I said, well, somebody's got to look out. And just then, a German ambulance came whizzing around the corner. Of course, when he saw all these people there, he started to make off. And I had this little gun in my hand, and I shouted, halt, and I fired the gun, and it hit the guy in the left hand, in the left arm.
About how far away were you?
Well, I was...
Careful, you've got the microphone.
Yeah, I was there, and it was about where they passed me by the window there, and I fired the gun, and he went straight into the hedge there, crashed into the hedge.
So just about 6 feet away?
Yeah. So he went about 30 yards up the road before he hit the hedge, because he was wobbling about, see. I couldn't make out why it was, because I didn't realise, of course, he's left-hand drive, wasn't it? I'd hit the driver. I couldn't make out why it should have affected it so much. But, of course, I realised afterwards. But anyway, we took him out, and his mate, and his mate had a rifle too, in an ambulance, of all things. And anyway, just after that, an old farmer came by with a horse and cart. So as they was medics, we let them go. But the reason I tried to stop them was that if they got away and got back to their depot, they could have told them that there was a bunch of maniacs loose down the road, you know. So we finished up that night. We hid in a little farmhouse. And the following morning we carried on down, and later in the evening, about 9 o'clock that evening, we saw the air landing, or the gliderborne coming in, about 5 miles away. Well, I was surprised we didn't carry on at that point, but sergeant said, well, I think his reasoning was that if we went in during the dark, it probably goes, oh, shot up our own people. So we stayed overnight, and then we came in, and we came to this blown up bridge. They'd blown it up on the River Deves, and crossed the river, this broken up, blown up bridge. And went in through Limenil, which was Brigade HQ. Found us, so when we got to Brigade HQ, they showed us where the 9th Battalion was coming in that evening. Because after the 9th Battalion had taken the battery, they had to come south and take a railway, a radio station. But they had to forget about that because they didn't have enough men.
How many were in this group that you were with?
About 15. When we did the attacks, you know, when we did all this nonsense and. Two of them went, tried to go through Truong, and as I say, only about last year, I was given a paper that with my name on it, where they said that I'd survived the first attack. They didn't know anything about anything else apart from the first attack. But when we got back to the battalion area. The battalion was only just coming in, really, from having done secondary work on the way down. You know, after they had done the battery, they had to come and they had another objective on the way down, and then they got to Limenil around about the evening of the second day.
And do you know the name of the sergeant who was in charge of the group?
My group?
Yes.
Sergeant Bullock, it was.
And how long were you on the loose from having landed in Normandy to reaching Brigade HQ?
About 36 hours altogether. So we jumped at 12:45 in the morning, 12:45 on D-Day morning, 6th of June, and we arrived in the battalion area about it must have been about 8 o'clock, I should think, 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening.
What state were you in by the time you got to Brigade HQ?
Oh, perfectly all right. That's the odd thing, because for some reason the sergeant was evacuated. couple of days afterwards, one of my old toon sergeants was injured in the battery, and he came back later on, and he said that he was in the sick bay, waiting to go back to England, and this Sergeant Bullock was put alongside him, and he asked what was wrong with him, and they said that he was suffering from exhaustion or something. I couldn't understand that, because the rest of us were all okay. I don't know if he'd done anything else after I left him, and he didn't come back from Brigade HQ. When we came back, we had a guide sent down. As a matter of fact, I had took a camera off one of these officers, and I sent him into the Brigade HQ with this camera, you see, and they sent the camera back and offered me a tenner for it, but it was a Leica, and it's worth about 60 quid at the time. But I didn't have it for more than about 2 days. Somebody nicked it off me.
What happened to it?
Somebody stole it off me. I wasn't very cute with it.
And you just handed the German prisoners over to Brigade HQ?
Yes. He took them into Brigade HQ, you see.
How many prisoners did you have?
Four.
What was their demeanour? How were they behaving?
I was amazed, because these two, first two, they were, I would say they were really first class soldiers, and I thought that we'd get a lot of trouble from them, but I think they maybe was intimidated by red berries and what have you. And the other two, I wouldn't class them as being in the top rank, but they were still tidy looking soldiers. But none of them made any fuss at all, even when we were shooting up their senior officers. And these three senior officers were certainly very dead when we left them.
Can you say more about how you shot up those senior officers? Can you describe it again, please?
That's very difficult to say. As a matter of fact, I don't know why we didn't shoot each other up, because we were on two sides of the road, and the two cars came between us. The first one got away. I don't know if anybody had to give in hit in the first car, but the second car, they were just shot to pieces, and they took them out of the car. As a matter of fact, I got in the car and I drove it a little way along the road, and then I realised that I'd never driven a car before, funnily enough, but it was, I didn't necessarily have an automatic drive or something on it, but it just went up the road, and I thought, well, if we can do it to them, they can do it to me. I got out quickly, left it. But that's why I finished up being last one to the bank.
And how many of these senior officers were shot up?
Three very dead officers. And their pay books were given into to the Brigade HQ. And in actual fact, I've seen an account of this, and the sergeant reckoned that we were 4 days adrift, and we'd killed about 20 officers, but I'm afraid that it was a bit of an exaggeration.
Have you any idea what rank they were?
No, I would put them as very senior. I don't know, I didn't know what the German insignia was, but certainly we all agreed that they were fairly, and of course the Brigade HQ must have known, because they had all the identification.
What kind of weaponry was used against them?
Well, I had a rifle. I should think most of the men had a rifle. They wouldn't have used the Bren gun. They had a Bren gun with us as well, but probably the we had Sten guns. Probably Sten guns as well.
Did Brigade HQ seem pleased about what you handed over?
I didn't see anybody from Brigade HQ. It was rather curious, because we landed up at this Brigade HQ area, and we were told to wait. And Sergeant Bullock went in with the guide, And then somebody came back and said, Knight Patton's down this way, and took us down. But we didn't see Sergeant Bullock again. So if some of what the story that Sergeant Bullock told may have occurred after he left us, but I doubt it. I can't understand.
What did the 9th Battalion tell you had been happening to them once you got back to them?
Well, I just realised that they'd landed and found that they only had, 150 men collected. And it's well documented because the colonel, of course, was thunderstruck. You know, they had to do the job. They only had 150 men to do it. But they did it. And at the end of it, there was only about 75 men left standing out of the 150. The rest were all either dead or injured. My now Sid Capon, of course, was in my company. He was one of the ones that actually took the gun with a sergeant. Sergeant Bedford, he was my platoon sergeant, and another private called Delsignor, I know was another one, but this is only what Sid Capon's told me since, you know, because he was on the spot.
So what happened to you once you got back to the battalion?
Well, I got there and I just got in a slit trench. Somebody had already dug the slit trench when I got there. So they must have, very likely they were people that were same as me, had been dropped the wrong side, and that they put them in the air ready for when the 9th Battalion came back.
Where was this?
In Le Mesnil. Actually, it was the bottom of Chateau Le Comte, in a wood called the Bois de Monde. Can you spell that?
I have a vague idea.
Bois de Monde. Yes, it was more or less not in the actual right in the front line. The front line was further forward, about 50 or 100 yards further forward. 50 yards, I'd say, about further forward.
And were you just waiting, or did you go into action in the slip trench?
No, we had comparatively little to do there. There was a lot of fighting going on at the top, and we were supposed to be the counterattack in case anybody, if they penetrated the front line, we were the counterattack outfit. And in actual fact, while I was there, in the three or four days that we were there, we did two sallies. We went through to the Chateau Le Comte through the woods, and that was a night patrol, and that was led by Major Robinson. No, was it? No, that was led by Major Dyer, and we went through there and we finished up. And we just laid up till dawn, and then we found that where we'd got to, there was nobody alive, a lot of dead bodies. And we left there, went back to our base, and the following night we went up to can you stop for a second?
To Breville, I think you.
Yes, to Breville, yeah. And we did a, it was about 1,000 metres, I think. We went to, what am I talking about? Can you delete that a bit? Yeah, or a kilometre otherwise. They blew up the road. There was a huge explosion. And I was rather close to it, and there's huge rocks coming thundering down all around. I was quite surprised, but nobody got hurt. And that was very important to blow that road up, because it was a vital part of the next operation, which was an attack on Breville. We didn't do that. The 9th Battalion didn't attack Breville, but it was done by the 12th Devons and the 12th Para. And it was a very vital attack, that one, that was done later on, because that was a very commanding peak. It, anybody that was in possession of that could see the whole of the Normandy area, and it was vital that our people held it. And that was taken a few days later.
What do you remember happening to you next?
About two nights later, we were up. We all had to get up and go up to the Chateau Le Comte and stand guard all round it. And we were just people were patrolling around the area in front. And then the following morning, the 51st Highland Div came up and took over our positions, and we went back and went back to a reforming area. And we were reinforced there by people from other regiments. You know, they weren't para, but just to put a few bodies back in the line. I was promoted there, made up to sergeant from corporal.
Were you happy to be made up to sergeant?
Oh yeah, chuffed. At that time I expected to be in the army for some time, you know, and I was quite happy about that. Matter of fact, the general came round, General Gale, and I think he was rather struck by how young I looked, because although I was 21, I used to look about 17 or 18 at the time. And he said, how long have you been sergeant then? And I said, all day. Had only been sergeant for about a day. They thought it was rather funny.
So you were in a rest area?
It was a rest area. It was a, it was behind, actually, it was quite well forward still, but it was in a reconsolidation area where we sort of got ourselves together and got rearmed and re-equipped and reinforced, you see, and then they put us back in the line then. After that, it gets a bit hazy for me, because we seem to spend such a lot of time in the line, at various places, I never knew where exactly where we were, you know.